Good evening. President Trump's budget breathes life into an old nuclear waste dump. Who turned out the lights in Venezuela? And Meatless Mondays on tap for New York City schools. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Tuesday, March 12, 2019. The U.S. government said Tuesday it has expanded a program requiring asylum seekers to wait in Mexico while their cases proceed through immigration court. They also reported that 240 migrants seeking asylum have been returned to Mexico under the program. Homeland Security officials said the program is now at the Calexico port, about 120 miles east of the San Ysidro port near San Diego, where the program began in late January. The Trump administration's program marks a major shift in how the U.S. handles the cases of immigrants seeking asylum and fleeing persecution in their homeland. Border arrests soared in February to a 12-year high, and more than half of those stopped arrived as families, many of them asylum seekers who generally surrender instead of trying to elude capture. A lawsuit challenging the program was filed in California last month, though a federal judge hasn't yet ruled on whether to halt the program while the legal case progresses. And legislation allowing adults to carry a concealed handgun without a permit or training has been signed into law by Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin. The Republican governor signed the bill Monday. Under the legislation, Kentuckians aged 21 and up who are able to lawfully possess a firearm can conceal their weapons without a license. It takes effect in late June. State lawmakers approved the bill earlier this month. Bevin has said most Kentuckians support it. On Sunday evening, the watchdog group Media Matters for America released a montage of Fox News host Tucker Carlson calling into a shock jock radio show with misogynistic comments, including the claim that women are extremely primitive. Now, Media Matters has produced recordings of Tucker expressing his fair share of racist observations in his call-ins to the Bubba the Love Sponge show. In comments from 2006 to 2011, Carlson said that immigrants should be hot or really smart, asking if people who come over and pick lettuce are going to build, you know, a stronger country 20 years from now. He tried out the primitive insult again, saying that Iraq is populated by semi-literate primitive monkeys. The Fox News host also said that he had no respect for Iraqi culture, where people just don't use toilet paper or forks. During the 2008 presidential campaign, he claimed that everybody knows that Barack Obama would still be in the state senate in Illinois if he were white. Carlson denied the existence of racism in 2008 in an exchange in which Bubba described white women with jungle fever as mud sharks. You can listen to the audio on the website that is run by Media Matters in America. Carlson also relayed white nationalist rhetoric, including the claim that white men are responsible for creating civilization. In 2006, a decade before the election of Donald Trump, Tucker imagined a president who would blame lunatic Muslims who are behaving like animals and who would say, "I'm going to kill as many of them as I can if you elect me." After Carlson's misogynistic comments were unearthed on Sunday, he released quite the non-apology. Media Matters, he said, caught me saying something naughty on a radio show more than a decade ago. Rather than express the usual ritual contrition, how about this? I'm on television every weeknight, live for an hour. If you want to know what I think, you can watch. Anyone who disagrees with my view is welcome to come on and explain why. Meanwhile, the White House is struggling with containing multiple attacks on evidently racist statements made by President Trump, even as his White House attacks Democrats for a measure passed last week that condemned both anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim rhetoric. Press Secretary Sarah Sanders batted at questions at a rare news conference on Monday.
We've also seen him tweet in the last couple of days that Democrats are the, quote, anti-Jewish party. Does the president really believe Democrats hate Jews?
Look, the president's been an unwavering and committed ally to Israel and the Jewish people. And frankly, the remarks that have been made by a number of Democrats and failed to be called out by Democrat leadership is frankly abhorrent, and it's sad, and it's something that should be called by name. It shouldn't be put in a watered-down resolution. It should be done the way the Republicans did it when Steve King made terrible comments. We called it out by name. We stripped him of his committee memberships, and we'd like to see Democrats follow suit.
First of all, you mentioned Steve King. The president, correct me if I'm wrong, has not condemned Steve King.
He
said praising white supremacy. Has the president publicly come out and said anything to criticize or condemn?
I speak on behalf of the president on a number of topics, and I've talked about that a number of times, and I'd refer you back to those comments where I used words like abhorrent and unacceptable.
I didn't hear you actually answer the question. So yes or no, does the president truly believe that Democrats hate Jews?
I am not going to comment on a potentially leaked document. I can tell you what I can tell you.
Does he think Democrats hate Jewish people, as he said on the South?
I think that they've had a lot of opportunities over the last few weeks to condemn some abhorrent comments. I'm trying to answer. If you'd stop talking, I'll finish my statement. The president has had and laid out clearly his position on this matter. Democrats have had a number of opportunities to condemn specific comments and have refused to do that. That's a question, frankly, I think you should ask Democrats what their position is, since they're unwilling to call this what it is and call it out by name and take actual action against members who have done things like this, like the Republicans have done when they had the same opportunity.
So I want to ask about Paul Manafort, but I just want to be very clear. You're not answering the question. Is there a reason?
I believe I answered it twice.
You didn't say yes or no. Does he really believe Democrats hate Jews? I'm just trying to get a sense of that.
I think that's a question you ought to ask the Democrats.
Just to get back to John and Hallie's question about the president's comments about Democrats and Jewish people, isn't that kind of rhetoric just sort of beneath everybody? And do you think that the president has thought at all going into this 2020 campaign that the rhetoric just needs to be lowered, whether it's talking about Democrats, the media, immigrants? Or should we just plan on hearing the president use the same kind of language that we heard in 2016 and all through the first couple of years of this administration?
Look, I think that the real shame in all of this is that Democrats are perfectly capable of coming together and agreeing on the fact that they're comfortable ripping babies straight from a mother's womb or killing a baby after birth, but they have a hard time condemning the type of comments from Congresswoman Omar. I think that is a great shame. The president has been clear on what his position is, certainly what his support is for the people and the community of Israel. And beyond that, I don't have anything further from you.
I think that just sort of drags down the rhetoric in the debate when you're saying something that's just patently untrue. I mean, obviously,
stating their policy positions
but
is not
Democrats
patently
don't, but
untrue.
But Democrats don't hate Jewish people. It's just silly. It's not true.
I think they should call out their members by name, and we've made that clear. I don't have anything further.
Rhetoric after Charlottesville saying that there are very fine people on both sides in Charlottesville, essentially suggesting that there are very fine people in the Nazis.
That's not at all what the president was stating. Not at any point. The president has been incredibly clear and consistently and repeatedly condemned hatred, bigotry, racism in all of its forms, whether it's in America or anywhere else. And to say otherwise is simply untrue. April.
Since the president did say that in Charlottesville, some very fine people on both sides, has he, in your opinion, or has he, or us, because I don't remember it, condemned the neo-Nazis in Charlottesville for their actions against the Jewish Americans there?
The president has condemned neo-Nazis and called them by name, which is what we are asking Democrats to do when they see the same type of hatred.
It was Sanders' first news conference in nearly 2 months, and she answered a question about a measure hidden in the $4 trillion budget recently released by the White House. The measure would provide money to open a long-block nuclear waste dump at Yucca Flats in Nevada.
Why did the OMB include money for the Yucca Mountain Waste Nuclear Waste Repository? And what are the chances it's in your spending blueprint? And what are the chances that Congress will actually enact that?
I think that the chances that Congress will do its job based on historical precedent over the last couple of months are probably unlikely. But that doesn't mean we're not hopeful that they will work with us, look for ways that we can reduce spending and grow our protect our military, do things like that, that which you see in the president's budget. We'd love for them to work with us on that.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the thinking was to put that in?
I'm not aware of any specific policy changes on that front or anything on there. I'll let you know if we have something. One last.
Currently, nuclear waste from nearly 100 power plants in the United States is piling up in pools of water near each nuclear facility. In the 1980s, the plan was to bury it underground in Nevada, a plan that's been stymied by nearly unanimous public opposition in that state. The radioactive waste specialist for Beyond Nuclear, Kevin Camps, says the waste is becoming a problem affecting the entire nation.
President Trump has consistently advocated for the continuation, resurrection of the Yucca Mountain licensing proceeding that was essentially canceled by the Obama administration, and it would be a tremendous waste of taxpayer money.
What is Yucca Mountain?
Yucca Mountain is a place in Nevada on western Shoshone Indian land that is near the nuclear weapons test site, some tens of miles away from that moonscape of craters, and it's the proposed high-level radioactive waste dump for the country. So the proposal is to dump permanently 70,000 metric tons of both commercial irradiated nuclear fuel and nuclear weapons complex high-level radioactive waste underground.
And what has been we've been talking about this for many years now. Why is this still in the conversation?
Yeah, it was first singled out in 1987 in a piece of legislation referred to as the Screw Nevada Bill, where the rest of the country ganged up on the sparsely populated state, which has grown by leaps and bounds in population since. And so for 32 years now, Nevada has successfully fended off this proposal. They do not consent. The Western Shoshone Indian Nation does not consent. They've been joined by 1,000 environmental groups over the decades in opposition to this environmental injustice that violates the Treaty of Ruby Valley of 1883, which was signed by the U.S. government with the Western Shoshone Indians. And besides all that, it's a scientifically unsuitable site. It's an earthquake zone. The ground is saturated with water. There's volcanic activity in the vicinity. It's a catastrophe waiting to happen if they ever went forward with this proposal.
Where does the waste go if it can't go there, though?
Well, the waste is piling up at the reactor sites. We have no good answer, and that's all the more reason to shut down the reactors as soon as possible. And for the waste that exists, and there is 80,000 metric tons of commercial high-level radioactive waste in this country, the environmental consensus endorsed by hundreds of environmental groups in all 50 states is called hardened on-site storage as near as possible to the point of generation. And that means get it out of the storage pools, which could go up in flames and render a time zone uninhabitable. Get it into dry cask storage, but dry cask storage that is good way with quality assurance and, in addition, fortified and safeguarded against attacks and accidents.
What pools? You mentioned pools. Is this a swimming pool where I can dive in and take a dip?
These are giant swimming pools. They're sometimes referred to as ponds, including in the UK, where they talk funny. They're 40 feet deep, and the reason they're so deep is to hold an immense amount of waste, but also to provide tens of feet of water as radiation shielding, because workers are at the top of those pools manipulating the fuel rods with remote-controlled cranes because they can't be close to the waste because it's so deadly radioactive. And the pools also provide thermal cooling, but dry casks can do that after a certain number of years. And so these vast amounts of waste that are stored in these pools need to be taken out before a pool loses its cooling water in a natural disaster or by dropping a heavy load by accident or in an attack. And, the poster child for this scenario is Fukushima Daiichi in Japan. We just observed the 8th anniversary of that catastrophe yesterday. But unit number 4 at Fukushima nearly went up in flames in the storage pool for high-level radioactive waste. It was sheer luck it didn't. If it had, the catastrophe would have been orders of magnitude worse. Instead of 160,000 nuclear evacuees, it could have been 50 million. Don't take that from me. Take it from the prime minister who was serving at the time, Prime Minister Khan, who said that a year after the catastrophe began.
Now, what is Trump actually asking for, and is there any chance this is going to happen?
Well, unfortunately, there are Democrats who want the waste out of their states. They don't care that they're going to dump it on another state. And Republicans are almost in lockstep in support of the Yucca dump. So we do have a fight on our hands at all times. I guess some good news is Trump, where he's tightening budgets here and there, has asked for less money this time around for the Yucca dump than he has in the past. But we're going to have to be vigilant, and a part of our vigilance is going to have to be on these so-called centralized interim storage facilities in Texas and New Mexico in Hispanic areas, which is kind of a plan B to Yucca, which the nuclear industry lobbyists in their political power, they have a plan A, that's Yucca, they have a plan B, that centralized storage. We're going to have to be vigilant on all these battlefronts.
Right. That's WIP and Andrews, Texas, and those places.
Well, it's very close to WIP in New Mexico. It's called Holtec International Eddie Lee Energy Alliance. It is a centralized interim storage facility for 2.5 times Yucca's quantity of waste. And then nearby, 40 miles away in Texas, at Waste Control Specialists, this consortium called Interim Storage Partners wants to send half as much again as Yucca. You put the two together, it's 3 times the quantity of waste targeted for burial at Yucca. But this would be surface storage, and it could become de facto permanent.
That's near the border there.
Yes, it's not that far from the Mexican border, and it's right on the borderlands between Texas and New Mexico.
So interesting. We haven't been hearing that much about, we've been hearing about the border, but this other aspect of the border that people haven't been hearing about.
You know, what's crazy is Trump had a round of applications for the border wall design, and one of them, cynically enough, was to put high-level radioactive waste in the border wall.
Really? Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, it's a proposal that didn't go anywhere, but somebody had the cynical idea to put high-level radioactive waste in Trump's coveted border wall. And thankfully, you know, that fell by the wayside. Another proposal that's largely fallen by the wayside was a solar wall. And incredibly enough, Trump said it needed to be transparent so that if people were dropping bales of marijuana over the border law, you could get out of the way before you were crushed to death. So that's the level of absurdity in the border wall proposals. But you're right, the centralized interim storage is not that far from the border.
All right, very good. Anything you'd like to add?
Well, an important issue for Nevada, Texas, New Mexico is that we all live there in terms of the high-level radioactive waste transportation that would be involved to get the waste out there. So most states, many major cities, and the vast majority of U.S. congressional districts would be crossed by trucks, trains, and or barges shipping high-level radioactive waste out to the Southwest. And right there in New York City, where you're located, incredibly enough, Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant has a proposal to barge the waste down the Hudson River, past Manhattan, into a New Jersey port. I can't think of a worse plan in terms of security vulnerability to a terrorist attack than barging high-level radioactive waste past Manhattan.
Kevin Camps is the radioactive waste specialist for Beyond Nuclear. And Venezuela's worst power and communications outage on Friday deepened a sense of isolation and decay, endangering hospital patients, forcing schools and businesses to close, and cutting people off from their families, friends, and the outside world. While electricity returned to some parts of Caracas nearly 24 hours after lights, phones, and the internet stopped working, several other populous cities remained in the dark as evening approached. Venezuelans have grown accustomed to power cuts, but nothing like the one that hit during rush hour Thursday evening, sending thousands of people on long nighttime treks in the dark to their homes. It reached virtually every part of the oil-rich country of 31 million, which was once Latin America's wealthiest. President Nicolas Maduro blamed sabotage engineered by the imperialist United States and U.S.-backed opposition leader Juan Guaido. Guaido, the leader of Venezuela's National Assembly, returned from a Latin American tour to Venezuela on Monday in order to escalate his campaign to topple Maduro and hold elections, and called for new protests on Saturday. The state-owned electricity operator blamed the outage on an act of sabotage at the Girl Dam, one of the world's largest hydroelectric stations and the cornerstone of Venezuela's electrical grid. Information Minister Jorge Rodriguez described it as a cyber attack on the dam's operating system, which signals to machines whether to boost or diminish power based on capacity and demand. Amid the continuing unrest in Venezuela, the United States said Monday it plans to remove all diplomatic personnel from the U.S. Embassy in Caracas. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo tweeted that the U.S. will withdraw all remaining personnel from the U.S. Embassy in Venezuela this week. He continued that this decision reflects the deteriorating situation in Venezuela, as well as the conclusion that the presence of U.S. diplomatic staff at the embassy has become a constraint on U.S. policy. At a press conference, Trump's special envoy, convicted Iran-Contra figure Elliot Abrams, said that the withdrawal from the embassy was not a sign that the U.S. was caving in.
Well, obviously it makes it more difficult to meet with all Venezuelans when the team is not on the ground. I'm kind of reluctant to sort of try to parse the secretary's words, but let me just say that in every decision we made, every decision, decisions on diplomatic activities, on visas, on sanctions, the safety of that staff was a key consideration. And that was something that weighed very heavily on our mind every day, literally every day. So I think that was what the secretary was referring to.
Okay, but when you said it doesn't reflect a change in a policy,
no,
it means that it was not intended to be some kind of hint or harbinger of military intervention or some kind of use of force.
Nothing has changed. We continue to say, because it is true, all options are on the table.
The Trump administration's special envoy, Elliot Abrams. Pompeo has blamed Cuba and Russia for the blackouts. He said, when there's no electricity, thank the marvels of modern Cuban-led engineering. Pompeo said at a State Department news conference on Monday. The Secretary of State added that when there's no water, thank the excellent hydrologists from Cuba. When there's no food, thank the Cuban communist overlords. And that was Pompeo speaking, the Secretary of State of the United States. And finally, meat is about to come off the menu every Monday at public schools in New York City. Mayor Bill de Blasio and schools chancellor Richard Carranza announced the launch of Meatless Monday starting next September. Both officials chowed down in the cafeteria during a visit to PS 130 in Brooklyn. Students will get vegetarian breakfast and lunch options on Mondays. More than a dozen schools in Brooklyn have been piloting the program the past year. They credited Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams, who championed the program. Adams, who says his own diet has helped him beat diabetes, says a vegetarian meal will help fight obesity and diabetes.
Meatless Monday is an announcement that every school in New York City will now have a meatless lunch period where children will be introduced to more healthier ways to eat and more healthier foods to consume. This is our combat against childhood obesity, childhood diabetes, and other ailments that is really impacting our healthcare system.
What does the menu look like?
It's a combination. Yesterday, they had everything from barbecue beans and other items, from celery to apples. You would be amazed when you watch children consume fruits and vegetables that are healthy for them. And we're really trying to do away with the misconception that the only source of protein lies in meat. That is not true. There are great sources of proteins in other food products, and we are attempting to introduce them to children, and they are more of a healthy introduction in their lives.
How did you come up with the idea? Are you a vegetarian yourself, sir?
I like to classify myself as a whole food plant-based eater, a person that eats as much whole food plants as possible. This journey started when I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and the doctor said I would have to go on medicine the rest of my life. It impacted my vision, and also I had severe nerve damage in my hands and feet, as well as high cholesterol and other serious health issues associated with diabetes. After going to a whole food plant-based diet, my vision cleared and my nerve damage went away, and I did not have to take any medicine at all. My mother also followed the journey, and after 2 months, she was no longer on insulin that she was using for 7 years and 15 years as a diabetic. It's clear that the power of plants and the power of healthy eating. Many people don't know diabetes is the leading cause of non-traumatic limb amputation, one of the top causes of blindness and heart disease, and the medicine only covers the symptoms and never puts you in recovery, but food can put you in recovery and actually put a disease like diabetes in relapse.
Was it difficult to actually get the city to adopt this and get the Department of Education to adopt such a big change?
Yes, it was extremely difficult, but one only has to go back to 1964 when the Surgeon General determined that cigarette smoke was dangerous to your heart and dangerous to your lungs. It was 30 years later that cigarette manufacturers testified in Congress and stated that the evidence was inconclusive. And it took more years before we finally determined that cigarette smoke was dangerous to us. And that is what we're going through now. There's no reason we're feeding our children food products that we know can lead to cancer. And we need government to be on board with the evidence and the science, and they cannot do what they did in 1964. We cannot have a repeat of lung cancer, heart disease, amputation, and other sicknesses and illnesses that came from cigarette smoke. We must be honest with the science and move our cities and our state and our country to a more healthier lifestyle.
How about the kids? Because the kids, it's said, have been notoriously difficult to get on healthy diets. You know, what's to stop them from skipping the lunch at school and going out for their burgers at McDonald's?
This is an ocean liner traveling in the wrong direction, and it's not going to turn around instantly like a speedboat. We're going to have to be patient, and we're going to have to charter a healthy course. And eventually, like many other things we saw in our society that was proven to be wrong, the ocean liner would turn around and move in the right direction. The young people I saw yesterday were excited about eating healthier. And if we cannot take one day of the week to stop eating meat, that is an indictment on who we are and what we are teaching our children. The children are ready. They're ready to grow fruits and vegetables in their school. They're ready to use the science of hydroponics and grow rooftop gardens and use soilless farming. They're ready to start moving our city to an urban farming agenda, which could have a boost in our economy. Our children are ready. We just have to get out of their way.
How did Mayor de Blasio like his vegetables yesterday?
He said he enjoyed it immensely, that he didn't realize it could be so tasty. And I think we're going to look back on these days and ask ourselves, what were we thinking, that we were not feeding our children healthy food? Government can't feed the crisis. Many of our children go home to unhealthy menus with no nutrition at all. Then they go to a governmental agency such as the Department of Education, and they don't have anything nutritionally balanced. So, in fact, there are some communities where our children are eating no nutritional meals at all, and that's horrific.
Eric Adams is borough president of Brooklyn. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, March 12, 2019. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul DiRienzo in New York.